This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up late on Friday, the House Speaker Paul Ryan was forced to pull the Obamacare repeal and replace bill because it lacks support from Republicans. Is the effort to repeal Obamacare dead, or is there a better way forward than what was being proposed? We'll talk about that when I'm joined by a member of the House Freedom Caucus, Virginia Congressman Dave Bratt, in just a moment. And another liberal landmine is uncovered that the Obama administration left behind, this time in the Army. Ron Cruz, executive director of the Chaplains Alliance for Religious Liberty, explains a bit later here on Washington Watch. Also, is the American society losing its grip on masculinity? National Review writer David French says we are turning young men into marshmallows, and the results are anything but sweet. We'll talk about that here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com, if you happen to miss anything on your way home, got to stop to pick up that bread or milk or whatever it may be, you can catch it all later online at TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. All right, on Friday, Speaker Paul Ryan withdrew the House Republican health care bill, the replace bill, when it was clear it didn't have enough support to pass. Now, it aimed to repeal and replace Obamacare, except conservatives contend it didn't fully repeal or replace the Affordable Health Care Act because it was using the budgetary measure, the Reconciliation Act that we had talked about before, which limited what they could do. Well, joining us now to talk more about this is Congressman Dave Bratt of Virginia. He serves on the House Budget Committee. He is a member of the House Freedom Caucus. But let me give you a little more background on Congressman Bratt and the reason I wanted him on today. He served two Virginia governors on their economic advisory boards, providing them with critical economic forecasts to help manage the Commonwealth. He also serves as president of the Virginia Association of Economists. He taught economics in college as well. So there is a key element of this that I think was failing to be addressed in the media and even in conservative circles, and that was the economic impact of these changes. Would it, in fact, drive down the cost of health care in the country? Let's talk about it with Congressman Dave Bratt. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Pleasure to be on with you.
Well, let's take that first issue, because I know I had a number of discussions with members of the Freedom Caucus, and their concern was the fact that what we were doing or what was being done would not ultimately affect the cost of health care because we were not truly returning to free market principles. What do you say?
Yeah, well, that is the core issue. And if we would have had a little bit more of the Trump core principles in on this, right? Trump did a great job of negotiating. We almost got there at the end. We were getting rid of the insurance reg, which drive up the cost. But President Trump's concern for the forgotten man, number one, right? That is why you have to have prices coming down. And underneath this bill, prices would go up 15% to 20% until 2020. And that's not good enough. And then his core second principle is cleaning the swamp and getting rid of special interests. Well, this is another federal mandated bill, right, that is going to manage one-sixth of the economy through the federal government. And so the insurance regulations are very complex and hard to understand, but I think the person back home gets it. When you go, your young person cannot go out and buy a cheap catastrophic plan. Why not? Because there's all these essential health care benefits. There's this Title I regulation. You have to buy everything. Every option available, and it's very expensive. And then on the bronze plan under Obamacare, the lowest plan, there's a $10,000 deductible now on average. So the prices are blown up through the roof, and then the bill wasn't polling well. It was 17% favorable the week before with Quinnipiac, right? And there was an average of all the polls, so if people don't believe me, just go look it up. But that we got to make sure we get this thing right. And so President Trump was doing the right thing. He was negotiating on the insurance reg, and now there's still good news. You know, some people think, Bill, it's not dead. We ran on this for 6 years. And by the way, some people are saying the House Freedom Caucus can't get to yes on anything. Well, no, that's not true. For 6 years, we all voted yes 50 times in a row, right, on a repeal bill.
So we In fact, the Freedom Caucus was key in supporting the 2015 reconciliation bill, which was the first bill that actually made it to the president's desk that gutted Obamacare.
Right. And so in this bill, we all recognize you got to compromise. So we weren't compromising within a federally run healthcare system, right? So for a free market economist to be negotiating within a federally run system, let me tell you, we were bending over backwards to try to get to yes, but we didn't work it out so that I could go back home and say, hey, the price is going to come down immediately. And that's where we got to get.
And that's ultimately what the American voter and the American citizen is going to look at in 18 months from now is, okay, the Republicans replaced this, but am I paying less for as good or better care than what I was getting under Obamacare? Correct?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And compare your premiums with Obamacare. Look at your premiums 10 years ago, right? And you almost need health care because you're going to have a heart attack when you see how much prices are going up every year. And so that's the good. President Trump is a smart, smart businessman, right? So he knows product quality and product price are the key. And he knows the premiums are going up again under Obamacare. So we're going to come back. He already knew in his head. And we're going to get a better bill. And this time, I think when he gives a little more input on making sure we price it right for the forgotten man and woman back home, we're going to get a much better bill, and we're going to make everyone proud.
So, Congressman Brown, what's the time frame on that? Is that something we see before the end of summer, or is that something that's going to be taken up next year?
Oh, I think we're shooting before the end of summer, at least. I mean, Mike Lee over on the Senate side is working to get, you know, that's part of the problem was we were at an artificial timeline with 3 weeks. So we were rushing it through, trying to monitor, and this is the problem, right? You're trying to analyze one-sixth of the economy and all the moving pieces in that.
Right.
It was an incredible task. So, but with a few more weeks or a couple more months, we're going to get it straight and put Bucket 2 has to do with what Tom Price can do and the insurance regulation. And we want as much of that as possible in the bill because then it's permanent, right? It becomes law.
Right.
If it's not permanent, then the next secretary under a Democrat regime can return it all back to Obamacare. So these moves, this is a once-in-a-century opportunity where we have the House and the Senate and the President, and we cannot goof this one up. We've got to get it right.
So, Congressman Brett, let's talk about that bill we spoke about just a few moments ago, the 2015 reconciliation bill, which the House passed. It passed through the Senate, went to President Obama's desk. He vetoed it. It gutted Obamacare. It eliminated 80% of the funding for Planned Parenthood for a year. What are the prospects of simply resurrecting that bill? It was said at the time under a Democratic president that it was to kind of show the American people what Republicans would do if they were in control. Why not just dust that off and try it again?
Yeah, well, I hate to get a little cynical, but I think we just saw the evidence. I mean, what was not reported in the press is more moderates were peeling off from this past bill than the House Freedom Caucus. We had probably right at about half the Freedom Caucus could vote yes and vote no. There were 40 or 50 moderates that were going to peel off. And so if you do the 2015 bill, that's closer to a full repeal, and you'll get way more moderate peel off from that bill.
But let me push back on that because they voted for it in 2015. Yeah. Why not come back and say, hey, you voted for it, same bill, why not vote for it today?
Yeah, well, that in my view, that's what we should do, right? And then it's always better to start off with that as your baseline, right? Then you can add the key safety net pieces, right? You start off with free market, and you let the insurance be insurance again, right? And everybody should remember back to the mortgage market when the federal government started giving out free mortgages and caused the housing crisis and then the financial crisis. So right now, you don't have the insurance companies doing insurance, and that's scary, right? So we all make fun of the big insurance companies, but part of it's not their fault. They're scared of the federal government, too. And so we need to give them relief and let them return to free markets like we should have let bankers return to banking and calculating risk. They provide a tremendous service for us. And so we ought to start with that baseline. And then we all believe in a safety net, right, the Judeo-Christian tradition. And the problem there is the pre-existing piece. That's not an insurance problem. They can't get insurance, right? So that's a health care provision problem, and that needs to be solved separately. And we agreed with that. We put $100 billion right. up for high-risk pools for the state, and you didn't hear us fighting back on that, right?
Yeah.
But we insisted that the insurance piece, we've got to return to free markets so the USA remains a free market economy.
Yeah, and I think the problem you have or we had with this current plan is that it did not return to those market principles. But I want to go back again to this 2015 because I've spoken to some members, moderate members, who said, well, that was a messaging bill. Well, you know what?
Right.
That's not what the American people were told. They weren't told that this was a messaging bill. It was said that, look, what we would do if we had a Republican president and the American people, the majority of the states, gave the Republicans a Republican president, a Republican House, a Republican Senate. And, you know, I think we ought to put those guys on the line and say, hey, you voted for it, need to vote for it again. This is the way to get rid of it, then create the pressure on the Democrats to get to the 60 votes in the Senate to create or to pass a well-thought-out health care plan that addresses all the issues you just articulated.
Yeah, well, personally, I agree with you. And believe me, the Freedom Caucus believes in that setup. And then the Senate, the free market folks, Rand Paul and Cruz and Mike Lee and Tom Cotton, they all want to go that route. But we'll see. I mean, we have to encourage our leadership to go that route. Leadership put forward all those votes. And you're right, they're on the record. And so I would love it if our leadership would put that forward. But that's a heavy lift. I'll say some more prayers tonight for that one.
Well, one final question for you, Congressman Brandt. Today, Sean Spicer asked about the whole issue of health care. Obviously, it's front and center because this is, I would have to say, you know, honestly, a setback for President Trump, who, you know, has put himself out there as a great negotiator and you know, wasn't able to bring even the Republicans along, now is saying that he's willing to work with Democrats on this. Is there a chance that they actually turn out with a more liberal plan that would bypass Republicans and work with Democrats?
No, I can't realistically see that. I mean, Chuck Schumer and Pelosi are so dug in politically. I mean, they think if Bernie is a little too far conservative these days. I mean, they got Elizabeth Warren. I mean, they're all racing so far toward the left. That it's not comprehensible. They would come our way on anything, much less agreeing to work on tax reform or on health care. So we got the conservatives, and, you know, a lot of people are coming after us. The mainstream media makes it very easy, right? They never go after liberals.
Right.
They very rarely go after moderate Republicans. Where are they going to go after? They're going to go after the, you know, I got a PhD in economics and went to Princeton Seminary, et cetera, right? And
yeah.
So if you're a conservative and you actually believe your own stuff, and I taught economics for 20 years, everybody in my district knows, right? If I don't vote for my principles, they know I'm fudging.
Right.
And so I got to be true to my character and who I am, and I put up the right vote. And in time, right now there's a lot of tension and everybody has ulcers and we need aspirin at night, but this will fade and everybody will see when the dust settles what the principled way to proceed was, and I think you put your finger on it.
I agree with you 100%. That's why I got you on the program, because I know you shoot straight. Congressman Dave Brandt, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Tony. Honored to be on your program. Thank you.
All right, folks, don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch right after this.
We all know what it feels like. We try to avoid it. Experts define it as an unpleasant sensory and emotional experience associated with actual or potential tissue damage, or describes in terms of such damage. What is it? It's pain. Did you realize that you probably started feeling pain at a very young age, or even before you were born? Scientific studies have increased our knowledge of life inside the womb. We now have strong evidence that unborn babies can feel pain by 20 weeks or earlier. At Family Research Council, we believe that all babies are worth protecting. We also hope that even those who don't share our pro-life commitment will listen to the medical community and support laws that protect the unborn child from cruel suffering. For more information, visit frc.org/fetal pain. That is frc.org/fetal pain.
American Family Radio, impacting America.
Yes, my name is Marilyn from Oklahoma, and I recently ran for state representative here in the state of Oklahoma. I had a feeling or a calling that God wanted me to do that after having been a listener of Sandy Rios and Tony Perkins. They both really made an impression on my heart, and I felt that God was calling me to run, and I did. And although I lost, I felt like I was obedient to his call, and I'm not going to give up. I'm going to keep trying to fight for this state and for this country. Thank you very much for what y'all do.
Your partnership with American Family Radio keeps your family informed on the issues of the day. Join us for our three-day share-a-thon beginning April 4th.
A charitable gift annuity through the AFA Foundation is an excellent way to provide yourself with guaranteed permanent income while at the same time supporting the American Family Association. Here's what one supporter told us.
I very much want to see God's word continue into the next generation. This is a way I can help AFA spread the truth and promote their biblical stand. My experience with the AFA Foundation continues to remind me that I have a small part in helping AFA in the battle for our nation's values.
Financial planning is essential to your family. A charitable gift annuity through the AFA Foundation is one way you can support AFA and the health of our nation. The planners at the AFA Foundation are here to help you do the most with your finances. You can call us at 800-326-4543, extension 345, find us on Facebook, or email foundation@afa.net, and learn whether a charitable gift annuity is right for you.
To Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Monday afternoon. Hope you had a great weekend. Hey, look, as summer is coming, I know it's we're still thinking spring, summer, and all those things, but I want you to think end of summer. I want to invite you to join us on an Alaskan cruise, an unforgettable getaway with the Family Research Council, the Washington Watch crew. We're going to have some great guests there. July the 29th through August the 5th, we'll be cruising up to Alaska. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, TonyPerkins.com. All right, is America losing its grip on masculinity? David French, attorney and author for National Review, wrote an article a while back, but I just actually my wife sent it to me, and I was reading it, and I thought it was fascinating because it's true. Men are getting weaker because we're not raising men. There's a lot of truth in it, and this is, you know, it's a cultural issue, but it's also a national security issue, believe it or not. Joining us now is the author himself, David French. David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, I read through your article. I know you wrote it last August, but, you know, how stuff kind of circulates through the Internet, and it's very timely. And I just wanted to ask you, what prompted you to put this article together?
Yeah, there was a study that came out last summer that essentially said that American men are losing their grip strength. Okay, that sounds like kind of a funny thing to study, but people actually study these things. And that American men, particularly college-age men, only have the grip strength comparable, for example, to middle-aged women. And that this is but one measure of physical decline in the U.S. So, for example, it takes an American kid far longer to run a mile than it used to. And it struck me that what's happening, particularly sort of in the upper middle class in the U.S., is their kids are being raised, young men are being raised very differently than even when I was being raised in the 70s and 80s. And in a manner where you're much less emphasizing, unless you play sports, and unless you play certain sports, in a manner that much less emphasizes the physical side of life. People are much less likely to do manual labor, much more likely to farm that out to other people. And as a result, I think it's cutting off young men, many millions of young men, from an essential part of growing up as a man.
Yeah, you said in your article, you talked about how raising a boy to be a young man used to be a natural act. I mean, just by, you know, cutting grass, chopping firewood, being outside. And you touched on one of my hot button issues. You pointed to, in this age of zero tolerance, school disciplinary policies where, you know, physical confrontation is an unknown with, you know, pushing and shoving, that sort of thing. Of course, I think it's also resulted in more people getting guns because they don't know how to deal with issues.
Right.
But you said that now parents of the, and you use the term privilege, upper class, middle upper class, raising a boy to be a young man, you have to be intentional. And
yes.
I think that's something that parents are missing. It's not, you don't become a man sitting on a couch playing video games.
Right. I mean, yeah, Call of Duty does not a man make. I mean, that's, I think that's absolutely right. And, you know, when I was growing up, and to be clear, I was a nerd, you know, I was not hardly the biggest physical specimen, but, you know, look, when I made extra money, I made it cutting grass. When I changed the oil in my car, I changed the oil in my car. When my dad was building a deck, I helped build the deck. I mean, that's just the way it was. And all of my fellow nerdy friends, it was exactly the same. I mean, on a Saturday, they could have been building a deck. We heated our house with a wood stove, and I was constantly lugging firewood everywhere. And it was just part of life. And what ends up happening when that occurs, and also the same thing. I mean, I grew up in public schools in rural Kentucky, and you begin to develop just an element of physical strength, an element of toughness that I think is really important in general for guys to possess. And when they don't possess it, I think there is a sense often of aimlessness, of purposelessness, and of confusion even as to what they're supposed to be as men when that's completely absent from their lives. And it has real consequences.
David, isn't this, though, aided by the feminist effort to emasculate our culture?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, one of the feminist efforts is to essentially cast things that are sort of stereotypically masculine, such as the enjoyment of physical strength and maybe a more aggressive nature, and to cast them in inherently sinister terms.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the fact of the matter is, you know, a man should grow up and learn how to be someone who protects others, and that requires a level of strength. A man should grow up to become a leader. And that requires a measure of courage. All of these things are not developed. They just don't fall out of the sky onto you. They're developed over time. And when you say consistently to men and boys, well, if you have any sort of aggressive tendencies, if you are taking pride in your physical strength, well, that's just shallow, and that's dangerous. Then you're really stripping a lot of people of their purpose.
Well, and you're endangering society. If you're not raising boys to be men who are defenders and protectors, who will do the work? You close your article with a paragraph that was very, it reminded me of something C.S. Lewis said. Our culture strips its young men of their created purpose and then wonders why they struggle. It wonders why men who are built to be distinctive from women flail in modern schools and workplaces designed from the ground up for the feminine experience. Men were meant to be strong. And you say there's no virtue in physical decline. Remind me of what C.S. Lewis said in The Abolition of Man. We make men without chest and expect from them virtue and enterprise. We laugh at honor and are shocked to find traitors in our midst. That's what's happening in our culture today. David, we're up against a break. I want to thank you for joining us. Great article. I'm going to encourage our listeners to go and read it at the website. Thanks, David.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, David French, it's a good piece. Parents, you ought to go read it. Go to TonyPerkins.com, follow the links over. And it's just a reminder, as parents, we have to be intentional about teaching our young men, our sons, to make that transition into manhood. That's one of the reasons I'm glad we live in the country. My boys have good work ethics. So do my girls. actually. All right, when we come back, we're going to be talking about the latest landmine that was uncovered from the Obama administration that they left behind. That's next. Don't go away.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Well, the big news this week is going to be no change in Obamacare. Looks like the president is going to let it ride for now. We'll see how long that lasts. This is considered a loss for the Trump agenda. I don't consider that, but I know a lot of people are. Nonetheless, it is certainly going to impact markets, and it looks like it's impacting markets probably all week long on the negative side, or at least the first part of the week. We'll have to wait and see, but obviously it's going to impact it. The interesting part is the positive side for the market has to be the fact that it looks like we're all that much closer to getting through some corporate tax reform. Now, I assume it's going to be tackled in such a way that corporate tax reform is going to be first before we get to personal tax reform, but corporate tax reform is the big issue. And I think if we can get that sooner rather than later, we've got a very good chance of seeing 2.8%, give or take, GDP growth for this year, which is going to instill an awful lot of confidence in the markets and traders. Speaking about GDP growth, we get our last look at fourth quarter GDP on Thursday. They're expecting it to be somewhere around 2%. I think 2% might be the number, and it doesn't look like President Obama is going to get his wish and at least have 1 year of over 2% growth. But anything could happen in this third look. We'll have to wait and see. But that comes out Thursday, and it's going to be interesting. Pending home sales and consumer confidence numbers, personal income, personal spending, and Michigan sentiment number, all numbers that we're getting this week that are going to give us a snapshot of the future.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, at T Perkins, you can keep up with what's happening. All right, Chaplains Alliance for Religious Liberty has sent a letter to the acting Secretary of the Army regarding the outgoing Secretary, that was the Obama administration Secretary of the Army, Eric Fanning, a decision to, on his way out the door, signed a directive that waste valuable resources on a plan to provide, quote, training on implicit and unconscious bias. End quote. Joining us now to explain is Ron Cruz, who's the executive director of the Chaplains Alliance for Religious Liberty. Ron, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Good to be with you again.
All right. Eric Fanning on his way out the door, promoting diversity and inclusion. Of course, he was the first openly gay Secretary of the Army, doing everything that he could to continue that agenda into the Obama administration. What was this that he was attempting to do?
Well, Tony, as you've said, for 8 years, the Obama administration used our military as a social pawn, just one after another, programs to promote a political agenda. And our military resources have been wasted in training and in diversity training and so many things. And so Eric Fanning, as the Secretary of the Army, Obama appointee, the night before he had to resign, when President-elect Trump was about to be sworn in, the last thing he did was sign a directive, what he called gender diversity training, creating a new program to require all Army personnel to receive a block of training that would root out what he called unconscious bias. This was a waste of Army resources that was, they would have to create training modules and programs and then spend countless hours of Army personnel sitting in this gender diversity training so they could discover what their unconscious bias. That's just code words, meaning that if you have a biblical view of sexuality, they're wanting you to identify it and let you know that that is no longer welcome in the Army. And so we've asked the acting secretary of the Army, and then we sent a CC copy to General Mattis to say, let's stop this nonsense, stop this waste of resources.
Any response so far?
Negative. No response yet, Tony. And I received this directive from a senior chaplain at the Pentagon, just wanted to give me a heads up. He just said it to me, say, hey, Chaplain Cruz, have you heard about this yet? And I looked at that and I couldn't believe what I was reading. So I sent some inquiries back to the Pentagon. Is the acting secretary of the Army working on this? Is this still being implemented? And I got no response from some leaders there in the Pentagon. And so that's why we have formally sent a letter asking for this train to be stopped. And I've also notified some members of the House and Senate Armed Services Committee just to let them know about this waste of Army resources.
Well, and I think you make a good point, Ron, and General Boykin, who's frequently on the program, talks about this as well. You only have so much time. You only have so much in terms of resources. And if you're training and spending this valuable time on this, you know, pushing this social agenda, you are not training the men and women who are in our military for their primary mission, and that is to defend and protect the United States of America.
Absolutely, Tony. Our military was created, as you just said, for one purpose, to defend against enemies, foreign and domestic. And when they're sitting in a classroom to identify their unconscious bias, that means they're not out on a firing range or they're not out training on their weapons and equipment. And that's also valuable money being spent on creating all of these training documents. It is time for this nonsense to stop, and it is my sincere hope that Secretary Mattis will be bringing on a team of folks for DOD and each of the services who will put a stop to this madness so that the military can get back to what it's created to do, to be ready to fight our nation's wars if needed.
But Ron, we're almost up against a break, but one final question. I mean, can you define unconscious bias? I mean, what in the world is that?
Well, that's just it. He does not define it in that directive. And my response to Mr. Fanning was, I've got bias, and it's not unconscious at all. I have a clear understanding of what Scripture says concerning sexuality, and I'm willing to speak it. And I believe there are many in the military who are in that same situation, and these folks need to be protected from this renegade training material.
Well, I appreciate what the Chaplains Alliance for Religious Liberty is doing to make that happen. Ron Cruz, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony.
And folks, we'll keep you posted on that. I'm hopeful that the Trump administration will respond to these issues. A lot of this is being done kind of quietly without fanfare, but as I've said from the very start of the incoming administration, you have to be intentional about this. It's not going to just happen. These bad things are not just going to go away. They will stay. All right, so you've got to uproot them and remove them. And that's going to take, probably going to take some pressure. And that's why I'm glad Ron, and I know he works with General Boykin and a coalition keeping focus, watch over our nation's military. All right, when we come back, we're going to open up the phone lines. I want to talk a little bit more about this topic of how America is losing its grip on masculinity. We're going to talk about that here on Washington Watch. So don't go away. We're coming back with your phone calls in just a moment.
Whoa, we have not had a response like this before. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We've been doing these spiritual heritage tours for like 20 years. We're sold out for June already, if you can believe that. We've got space left on our September tours of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, and then Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. We call them spiritual heritage tours, and I don't know how long these September seats will last. So what do you attribute that to, someone might ask? Maybe it's the fact that we have a new person occupying the White House. Maybe that has something to do with it. But in any event, we welcome you to come with us on our September Spiritual Heritage Tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon and Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. Those are two separate trips. You can do both, or you can do one or the other. We'd love to have you. Go to spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com.
Join Norman Geisler, Richard Land, Michael Brown, Frank Turek, and others for Southern Evangelical Seminary's National Conference on Christian Apologetics. It's October 13th and 14th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Enjoy informative talks, a live debate, and a dialogue with Ken Ham from Answers in Genesis. Plus, there's the premiere of the American Family Association documentary, The God Who Speaks. Register by May 1st and receive a special gift. Visit ses.edu for details.
Physicians keep learning after medical school in order to better save lives. Shouldn't Christian leaders keep learning to better save souls? Hi, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi, and online around the world. Are you a Christian leader who thinks it's important to keep learning? WBS online weekend and evening classes allow graduate students to become better equipped to make disciples in a constantly changing world. For more information, visit wbs.edu.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. Imagine Christians escaping horrific persecution at the hands of radical Islamists only to come to the safety of America and have the federal government order the building of a mosque in their neighborhood. That's what's happening in Sterling Heights, Michigan. After the city council voted to deny the building of a third mosque within the city due to traffic and other zoning concerns, the Department of Justice, with Obama holdovers, joined with the American Islamic Community Center to sue Sterling Heights. Now the city council has caved to this pressure, violating its own ordinance, and the proposed mosque is scheduled to be built in the heart of an Iraqi Christian community unless the efforts of the American Freedom Law Center to stop the building of the mosque are successful. Pray for these Christians who fled persecution only to find it here in America. And pray for the American Freedom Law Center. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
Good afternoon. This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Okay, I want to talk a little bit more about this story, this article that David French wrote, essentially how America is losing its grip on masculinity. Here's the question I want to ask. I want to hear from those of you who have raised or are raising boys, how you are being intentional in providing them, providing ways for them to develop healthy masculinity. You know, not just being, you know, men. I mean, have healthy masculinity. How are you training them in both moral courage and physical strength? I think it's important. I think it'd be good to share. So, want to hear from you. 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. And as I put that out there, I didn't get a chance to talk about this with David French, but it's something that it goes back a few years. The Army, back in 2010, for the first time in 30 years, changed their basic training. They changed their physical training to deal with core strength, you know, basically kids were couch potatoes, and so they had to strengthen them, set-ups, pull-ups, all those kind of things to strengthen the core. But what was very interesting is, and I'm going to quote from this article, this was actually a Daily Caller article back in 2002, they needed to learn how to fight. Now, I'm not talking about fighting in the millet. I mean, fighting in combat. I mean, all of us needed to be trained for that when we went in. That's not something you normally do. But I'm going to quote, most of these soldiers had never been in a fist fight or any kind of physical confrontation. They are stunned when they get smacked in the face, end quote. General Boykin and I often talk about this, that until you've been basically gotten your nose smashed, you really don't have a grip on what life is all about. And you, and this is my beef with these zero tolerance policies. Now, before you start sending emails, I am not for physical violence. I'm just saying, look, kids are kids, okay? They do a little pushing, do a little shoving, and it's much better that kids deal with things the way kids deal with, and then they're corrected by their parents, and they're taught how to handle aggression and not how to handle aggression, instead of just letting it become pent up until they go and they get a gun and they come back and commit a mass murder at their school or something like that. But also, it's become a national security issue that we don't have boys that are physical enough to handle the endurance or have the endurance that's required to engage in what is required in our military. Now, of course, they do train them, but they've had to totally revamp the training in order to get these kids set to do this stuff. But I just thought it was very interesting that, you know, these boys come in there completely unequipped for what they're about to encounter. So I want to hear from you. Those of you who have raised or are raising boys, how are you being intentional in providing ways for them to develop healthy masculinity? 866-372-7234. And let's go to Alabama where Joseph is on the line. Joseph, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me, and I have to say this before I say anything. Y'all are doing excellent work. God bless you with everything that you're doing.
Well, thank you, Joseph.
My kids, they're grown now, you know, but the main thing is I think that they, a lot of the kids are basically what some people call snowflakes. They've grown up, they haven't grown out. And one of the saddest things, and I have to say it like this, I want to say it, you know, the way, you know, what my heart is telling me to say at this point, is that when they go like two or three tours over to Afghanistan or whatever, they're not used to, if they're snowflakes when they start, when they go over there, they're going to be traumatized, especially after the third or fourth time. And because in this country, they're not really raised to be tough, kind of tough like we was when we was growing up, mm-hmm. you know, and it's a sad thing, and they can't figure out, well, why do I have, you know, PTSD and all this kind of thing? Because how you raise your kids, you send them in the military, is very important how you raise them. Because when you send them over there and they're snowflakes, automatically they're going to be traumatized, you know, for quite some time, man, because we're raising them to be weak, you know, in a lot of ways, because we don't let them go outside and play. They do video games all the time, which is not reality. And when reality hits them, when they go over to another country to fight, it's too much.
That's very interesting, Joseph. I'd really like to see some studies on that, because I honestly had not thought about it from that standpoint, the emotional. And I in no way want to diminish what, and I know you're not either, about what these men and women who have been in combat situations they experience. Now, I served 6 years in the Marine Corps but was not in combat. Served time as a police officer, saw more, hostilities there than I did in the Marine Corps, but I do think there's probably an element of that where if boys are soft and you know both physically and emotionally, not having to face difficult, strenuous, physically demanding circumstances, it could have an effect. It'd be interesting to see that. Joseph, thanks so much for the call. I think we've got to be intentional. I have two sons, one who is 18, the other still younger. He's our caboose. He's about 9 years old. But I all of my kids, we live out in the country, work. They've all learned how to work outside. Hard work, and I think it's good for them. Hard work never hurt anybody. I grew up doing that. A lot of the work I did was not at home. It was, you know, I started working at 15. But I think work is good, and I think manual labor is good. And my policy has always been, if I can do it, I don't need to hire somebody. And I just think we're missing that, especially in this kind of culture where we look down to some degree on manual labor, and we'll just hire somebody to do that. And I think we ought to teach our kids to do it, learn how to work with their hands. Anyway, Robert, thanks so much for calling. Let's go to Oklahoma, where David is on the line. David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yeah, hope you can hear me okay. I was telling the gentleman that I'm coming out of a homosexual background, and I agree with what that gentleman said. I didn't hear everything, but I did hear a little snippet of how he talked about you do manly things, you do what are known as guy things that helps you in your role as a guy in your confidence, and something that you said about a physical fighting. I don't agree that fighting is necessarily condoned, but
right.
In junior high, I was bullied for about 2 years, and this guy made my life in junior high, and I would have given anything if my father would have told me. I don't think I ever shared it with my father or my parents, but I would have given anything if my dad would have said, hit him once, he'll leave you alone. Mm-hmm. And it's probably true. And I just want to thank you.
Well, thanks, David. I appreciate that call. My dad used to tell me, he said, don't you ever start a fight, but don't ever walk away from one. And I think, look, I'm not advocating violence or fighting, but no one should be bullied. And by the way, parents, if your kids are being bullied, there's no room for that for whatever reason. And David, you prompted something, remembered something, and had in a conversation with another man who had come out of homosexuality, years of it, and he was actually teaching on this. He's a national speaker now, and he was saying that he was actually speaking out at Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills, where I was at this past week. This has been a while back. He was there. But he said something. It's very profound. He said, Dad, take your kids out and get them dirty. Just get them dirty. Get your boys dirty. Get them under the car and get oil on them. There's just something manly about being dirty. Now, of course, that's why you have mothers. They clean you up before you come in the house. So you just have to clean, wash my hands before I could wash my hands, to come in the house. So, yes, that's what men do. Men get their boys dirty. The mothers clean them off. I know that's, people are going to say that's such a chauvinistic statement. Hey, you know what? It is what it is. David, thanks so much for the call. Let's go to Louisiana, where Robert is on the line. Robert, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Thanks for having me today.
Well, glad you're with us.
Tony, I got a son. I have four daughters as well, and he's all boys. But my first comment is similar to one of your previous callers. I think video games are one of the worst things that have ever happened to America's youth. And also, nowadays, at least we're around here, kids only have physical education once or twice a week at school, and it's generally not very physical. I think that's a big problem, and of course, the attack on American men's masculinity in general doesn't help. But I think those two things are very big problems.
I would agree. Hey Robert, how old are you?
I'm 34, Tony.
Okay. I was going to ask you what your favorite activity was when you had PE back in school, but you probably they probably didn't allow what I'm about to say when you were there because they probably cut it off. But my favorite activity, anybody want to take a guess what my favorite activity in PE was? Now, once I got to junior high, we had football, so that became the substitute for our PE. So it was really elementary in PE. Anybody want to take a guess? Dodgeball. Loved the dodgeball. Of course, now that's obviously too aggressive to be played in school. But, there's nothing like either dodging a ball or having the dodgeball that you're throwing hit its target. That'll toughen you up. A little dodgeball. You go back to English class and the side of your face is all red from the dodgeball. Oh, well. Going to get plenty of cards and letters from this program. All right, let's go to Missouri, where Tricia is on the line. Tricia, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I wanted to let you know that I have four boys. Three of them are serving in the Air Force. and that I wanted to let you know that the way I raise my boys, I raise them all the same across the board. First, to honor God, to stay close to their church, stand firm on their foundation. And second, I think it was very important to allow them to protect women. They have three sisters. They walked them home when they were babysitting at night. They made sure they were taken care of at school. And I think the third thing, I agree totally with what you said, let them get dirty. Let them try things and fail at things, and let them see successes from hard work. So I just wanted to let you know my secret with my four boys, and they all honor God, and I'm very proud of them. So I wanted to share that with you. So,
well, congratulations on a job well done. And thank you for allowing your boys and encouraging your boys to serve. In fact, I think that's probably the protective nature that you helped instill in them by looking after their sisters. And again, I know that some, you know, those on the left feel that they're very chauvinistic, but I still believe in the idea that men should protect women. Doesn't say women can't protect themselves. I know some very capable women. But I think as a culture and as a whole, we should be teaching our boys to do just that. And I think that is why you see men like that going into our nation's military. And predominantly, you can look at this, and this is statistics, that you see more members of the military coming from conservative areas of the country, and they're disproportionately, they have a faith background. And I believe it goes to what Jesus said over in John. Greater love hath no man than to lay down his life for his friends. And that's a part of teaching that protective instinct. All right, we're going to work in a couple more, well, maybe one more call here. Let's see. Let's go to, where are we going? Let's go to Arkansas, where Carrie is on the line. Carrie, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. I listen to your program about every day. I have four sons, which are pretty much grown. I've got my youngest one's 19-year-old in college. The other three have been to college and very successful. And to me, I mean, two of them are police officers, one of which is still in the Army. Army National Guard, served in Afghanistan. We've always roughhoused. I mean, we've always lived out in the country, like you said. And, you know, we've been close to God, always faithful church followers and Jesus followers. I mean, basically, we just pretty well live by ourselves, and which I'm married and all that, but they have been very successful in life. I don't know what else to say about them. They, one of them is a manager at a Sonic, and the other two, like I said, are police officers, and the youngest one is in college. They've all played football, basketball, baseball. I've just enjoyed watching them grow up, and I've enjoyed watching them grow in their faith.
Well, that is the critical element right there, the faith. Carrie, thank you so much for calling in, and I commend you on raising your boys successfully. The foundation has to be faith, okay? You don't want to teach a man to be strong without having the moral courage that comes that is rooted in a faith, in an understanding of who they are in Christ Jesus. Because when you know why you're here, who created you, and for what purpose, then it all falls into place. And so that is the very foundation. So parents, first off, teach your children to walk with the Lord, to know Him. And then teach them to be brave and courageous. And give them a little space, but be there to catch them. Hey, great conversation. Left a lot of calls on the board. Maybe we'll get a return to this topic a little bit later. I leave you with the words of the Apostle Paul. When you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, you know what to do. Keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.